know you're broken hearted, cause the peace you're hoping for is off the scenes apart.
Welcome to We Love the Weather podcast from IlliniBoard.com. I'm Robert Rosenthal. We're going to go, just like last week, straight to the guest, no intro. My guest today is Will Leach. How do I describe this? Like, you probably hate the Deadspin moniker.
I mean, you know
him from the guy who started Deadspin, but how do you want to be known? Introduce yourself how you're known.
Thanks for having me, Robert. I'm Illini first and foremost. I'm a Mattoonian, actually, first and foremost.
Yes,
then I'm an Illini. But yeah, I'm a writer. I started Deadspin back, which died in November, unfortunately, but it's still, its corpse is still kind of flipping around a little bit. But I started Deadspin in 2005. Now I write for New York Magazine, I write for the New York Times, I write for MLB. If you see some baseball stuff, I have my fifth book coming out this year called How Lucky, which takes place here in Athens where I live, but the main character is from Charleston, so I had to get my Central Illinois roots in there somehow. I am an Illini. I also, for the record, during the season, because Robert is covered with so other many other places, I write with my friend Tommy Craggs, who went to Uni High and is from Champaign and a fellow former editor of Deadspin. We do Illini power rankings and dialogues for Smile Politely, which is, he's friends with the guys that run that, and so we got to do that as well. But I am more than anything, the Illinois basketball is the central organizing principle of my childhood life toward now, and so I will talk to you about this as long as you will let me.
How did isn't there a third Deadspinite who was Illini besides you and Craggs? Wasn't there like a third one who had an Illinois background?
There's a few people. Well, Tim March was from Chicago, so he's from Chicago. So he's not an Illinois guy, but he's from Chicago, and he's a White Sox guy. I think all that did was just allow them to turn them against me and the Cardinals. I think that's why Deadspin had such an anti-Cardinals thing. I think that started out as a joke against me and then kind of rolled downhill. But I can handle it. I one thing I've learned about internet discourse, I liked your newsletter about this. I am one of the 13, by the way. And I liked your newsletter about this, about how discourse has gone in pretty much every aspect of American life in the last 10 years. And but the good part of that is, I know for a while I felt like, oh, everybody hates the Cardinals, which is true. But now I realize everybody hates everyone. So it doesn't bother me as much anymore.
It's okay.
Yes. I've made my peace with it.
Yes. Okay. So the main focus I want to do on this pod is, and as I explained to you before we started recording, there is a frighteningly old portion of the fan base that doesn't think of Illinois basketball the way that you and I think of Illinois basketball, to where there is someone who is 27 years old and graduated 4 years ago or 5 years ago, and they say, yeah, I think when I was like 11 or 12, I remember the Final Four team, but I really wasn't into sports yet. And my whole years, we never went to the tournament, and so it wasn't a thing. So there's this entire void of what Illinois basketball. And, you know, we know Illini Twitter. We know how people go nuts and go crazy of like, why didn't you include us on the top 15 programs of all time? Why didn't you, you know, we are something. We went to the tournament 21 out of 25 years in a row, you know, all this. So our job tonight is to go back through what Illinois basketball really means and why it's such a thing and why there's such thirst with this season of like, yes, let's get back to where we belong. So I'll start you down that journey of your first memories with Illinois basketball and where this began for you.
Yeah, you know, as anyone that's ever listened to a basketball post-game call-in show on WDWS, and they make podcasts out of those, so I actually listen to those, if just to make me feel like I miss home sometimes. And there's always that guy from like Philo or Decatur or Mattoon that calls in and can't believe that thinks the players are too showy, thinks the offense is too, there's not enough fundamentals. and so on. And I would argue the reason for that, I would argue that is the core of the Illinois fan base, which is not really cool, I would say, all the times. But I think there's a reason for that. And I think the reason that Illinois basketball is such a big deal is, one, they obviously had a lot of success at what Lou Henson was able to do. My ongoing theory about this, though, is I grew up in Mattoon, and we are in the WCIA viewing area. Now we live in a world where you have to have Big Ten Network or Big Ten Plus, and maybe you can get games on FS1 or whatever's going on. But, you know, for many, many years, games in the Illini games were literally just shown on WCIA. Like, they were shown on the local channel. Dan Rohn, there's Dan Rohn and Chris Widlick and all of these guys from back in the past. Dan Rohn's way back before he was on WGN.
Yes.
But these games were just called locally because there was enough desire nearby to just, like, even no matter what CBS was showing in its primetime programming, it got preempted in Champaign and all the surrounding areas to show Illini games. There's a famous commercial I always joke about where it sums up Central Illinois very well, where there's like a dad, there's a dad and his son working out in the tractor out there, and the Case IH or something, before Case IH, more John Deere time.
Yep.
And all of a sudden the dog starts running out and you hear mom, of course, who has nothing else in her life but cook for her father and for her son and husband, and run out and say, "Tommy, Billy, it's time to come in. The Illini are on." And dad looks at the son and they look at each other and they know that this is a family experience they're all going to have, because it was Illini basketball on WCIA. It was everywhere within the WCIA era. And I interviewed Dan Rohn once a few years ago, and he always talked about how to this day, for many, many years, WCIA was the best watched CBS affiliate in the entire country. Like, the ratings for WCIA, no matter what the other shows were so much higher. Remember when Letterman went on to CBS and he got pushed back a half an hour because they had to show MASH after the news? Yep. That was how big and powerful WCIA was. And so because they carried all of those games, everyone was able to watch all of them all the time, which means I didn't miss. Not only did I not miss it, this was my excuse. This was the one thing I got to do with my dad. This was the one thing that everyone was so huge for. So all of these games were on forever. Now, I remember I went to speak at the University of Illinois a few years ago, and at the time, the Big Ten Network was not in the dorms yet. And I'm like, for crying out loud, like, why you couldn't make it harder for someone to be able to watch these games? And so my longtime argument is, obviously, Illinois has been good at basketball for a long time. But also, these games were every single game was on. And it was on locally. They were on constantly. They were good. And they became the way that, like, I always argue that, like, in Central Illinois, they became what the Yankees are in New York, or what the Cardinals are in St. Louis. And so because of that, I feel like that has led to this whole generation of people that are obsessed with Illinois basketball, and also saw all of that success. My first memory ever of Illinois basketball was in 83-84 season. It wasn't my first memory because I'd watched them throughout the year. But my first tragic Illinois fan memory is in 1984, I believe. They were very, very good. The effort winners and Bruce Douglas and George Montgomery and all of these guys. And they made it to the Elite Eight and played at Kentucky. That was back when the tournament
could be a game.
And it was a terrible call. We all know the terrible call at the end of the game. And I was eight. And which is younger than my oldest son is now, which is insane. I cried I could not believe the unfairness of the world. Not only that it was a bad call, not only that they were playing at Kentucky to go to the Final Four against Kentucky, but then just the fact that I just thought Illinois was the greatest team in the world and they would beat everyone all the time forever. And it turns out that was not the case. Illinois sports had more in store for me for that. But to watch those teams for so long, the Henson teams, and really everything up until Deion Thomas, I'll put it this way. If I live in Athens, Georgia, and I'm a season ticket holder for Georgia basketball. When they fired Mark Fox, I love my tickets. I always joke that I don't have the Jack Nicholson seats, but I have the Diane Cannon seats. I'm like right there on the floor. Wonderful seats. And I love them. I take my family. I have four seats right there. We sit in front of a federal judge. I just feel like so cool. And I love these seats. But they talked about hiring Bruce Pearl. And I thought, oh, well, not only will I obviously no longer be a season ticket holder for this team, I'm going to burn down the Coliseum. I'm going to burn down Segment Coliseum. Bruce Pearl, obviously. And so from that era and what that kind of ended. But I think what happened after that with, obviously, with, I would argue, a very underrated player in the history of Illinois basketball is Lon Kruger. He is the one that took over for Lou Henson and was really good. I think he gets lost a little bit because Bill Self was so good. But Lon Kruger had some really good team. He recruited a lot of those guys that even Self started out with. And I think would have stayed. He went to the NBA. Like, it's not like he left for Michigan or something. So there was a stretch there for so long that they were so good. And I think that's really... I know that we live in a world where history began when you were 13 or 14, but it didn't. You know, and I think you still see it. You're right with those polls that you see every time there's an sort of Illinois thing. It's always a thing. I appreciate Matt Norlander, who's always a big Illinois basketball guy, along with Andy Katz. Matt Norlander just did the top 100 programs in history. I think Illinois was in the top 15 or top 16.
I think 15 or 16. Yeah.
And so, like, they are clearly... if you are young and think, is Illinois basketball a thing? You are the, like, you're just, like, that's not, like, you're the only one that thinks that. Because anyone that's been around longer than that knows how big of a deal that this is. And so I think, and, you know, we can argue the reasons for how it turned. I know you have some thoughts about that, and I generally kind of agree with you on those. But the thing that I think has been exciting is knowing that getting back to that level, and not to like Final Four level, but getting back to that basic, you know what, should be a Sweet 16 contender every year in the top 25 all the time. Getting back to that level shouldn't require a Herculean task. And so I think that that's the hope. But certainly this is a team that should be in the top 25 every year, has the fan base to do it every year, has the recruiting base to do it every year, and has something that they did for basically 20 straight years.
Yep. I'm going to touch on two things you talked about. One, the Dickie Beal game. I think, I believe they then went up 4, and maybe Altenberger came down and just hit a meaningless shot to cut it to 2. I think they lost. And I remember asking my dad, like, that was my turn the machines back on moment of like, I refuse to accept that the game is over and this is final. Like, can't they? Like, is there a 4-point shot? Is, you know, did he make a 4-pointer?
Right.
Like, is there something that could happen? You know, because I was the same way. The disbelief as a child.
Yeah.
I'm a couple years older than you, but I, you know, the same kind of like, these are my heroes, and they can't be finished. This can't end right here, because that was the first team I really, really idolized. Like, you know,
it was right after Eddie Johnson. Right after, and that's really even like right after like. Yeah, because I think Douglas was on that team. But yeah, that was right after Eddie Johnson. Eddie Johnson I think, was my dad's favorite player. He was at the game where he hit the shot against Michigan State. That was it was right before I got into it. I wasn't quite into it yet.
Yeah, yeah. I remember, like, my first memory, I've always said, is my dad went to the Bragg and Rights game with a friend of his in, like, 1980, I think, or something like that. And, you know, that my first real exposure to sports was, like, you know, him explaining to me, like, okay, here's geography, and these two states sit next to each other, and this city's in the middle, and they're starting this series. That was the second year in St. Louis, I think, something like that. Anyway, those are the roots of all this. But then, I always quote this stat, 83-06, we missed the tournament only 4 times. Those 4 times were 91, when we would have been in the tournament. We were third place in the Big Ten, but the Bruce Pearl sanctions had come down, and we were ineligible to make the tournament. Then all the recruiting sanctions hit, and the 91-92 season was like 13-14 or something like that. The first losing season in forever.
I think it was like Tom Michael, right? That was Tom Michael, Deion Thomas year, like the last year.
Yes, which for the next year, then they started the posters of Mr. Inside, Mr. Outside.
Of course, that was on my father's garage for about 15 years.
Yes, and then Tommy Michael, like, he had an injury, and then they went to, you know, that was when Rennie kind of took over in the backcourt and everything else. So, and then 93-94, they were in the tournament. 95, they were in the tournament. 96, they missed. That was the Roy Rogers, Alabama, Lou Henson's final game in the NIT.
Yes.
And then, of course, 98, they win the Big Ten, but did it with 5 seniors, and 99 was the Lon Kruger rebuilding season.
And let's not forget, they still almost made the tournament that year because they have the bottom seed of the Big Ten tournament and made it all the way to the Big Ten championship game.
Correct.
And it's funny because I was in college, my college year, I tracked college exactly when Kiwan Garris was at Illinois. Yes. So I was a freshman when he was a freshman. And I was out in 4 years like he was. And I worked at a student newspaper. My favorite story from that time, the two stories from that time are one, I interviewed Lon Kruger when he got hired because he wanted to do an interview with the student newspaper to show, hey, I'm going to be cool with the students. And so I did an interview. And the first question I asked him was, so I have to ask you, what are your thoughts on the Chief? You know, he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, you know, the Chief, you know, the mascot here. It's like a really big deal. He's like, I'm sorry. I'm not sure what you're referring to. I'm like, oh, okay. He's like, is there a thing with the Chief? I was like, oh yeah, there's a thing. There's a thing with the Chief.
You might hear about this.
You need to prep this answer because you're going to need it. And to be Kiwan Garris, I always feel like Kiwan Garris will remain one of my favorite Illini. I think there's always a little bit of disappointment just because they never quite. I feel like there's a little bit there just they never quite made it to the next spot. But the Malcolm Hill idea, right? The idea that this was a really good player that just never was able to make the next leap. But he was great, and I did a great story for him at the DI where I always wondered what it would be like to be. How an athlete is treated on campus. So Kiwan was so nice, and he let me go with him for a night on the town, just going through Green Street and going to all the bars to see how Kiwan Garris is treated. And it was really interesting story. It's a fun story. I love that piece. But like after three bars, he's like, "You've got enough, right? Because I'm going to go actually have some like real fun now." And I was like, "Oh yeah, of course, of course. Go do your fun things." Yeah. So I can't believe you let me hang this long. So I always. Right. But that's certainly my era.
Love it. Love it. I was the same era. I think I'm 2 years older than you, and I went 5 years, and I kept my DI subscription, I should note, for the 95-96 school year because I enjoyed this writer for the DI who would write about sports, which was you. So as I've, you know, I've never really talked about what my job was before this was my job, but my degree was landscape architecture, and my minor was parks and recreation. Like, I wanted to go into public design of parks and trails and things like that. And so that the minor that you get at that point is called leisure studies. And people know leisure studies because when they used to put the Illinois football players, like, you know, here's the starting lineup and they'd list their major. So many of them were in leisure studies and there were jokes. If there was Twitter at the time, it would have been everywhere. But Kiwan also had leisure studies. So I had like seven classes with him. And I had this moment of, again, I'm just this guy, you know, where we have a test coming and the professor passes out the test and he doesn't, and it's a like a Scantron, like fill out the circle, and he doesn't have a pencil. And so he asked me for a pencil by name. I was like, Have you guys met my boy Kiwan over here? We're so close. I gave him that pencil that one time. Like, I floated on that moment for 2 weeks of like, this hero of mine knows my name kind of thing. And it was, those were the days of like when I'm in high school, the 89 team, like they were conquering heroes. Like, if you would have seen Kenny Battle on campus, you would have fainted. Like, it was such, they were such a iconic team. You know, why do people still talk about it apart from Illinois? You know, people still talk about the 89 Flying Illini.
You know, and
everybody talks about the third place team in 86, you know.
And I think part of that too is that was also, frankly, around the time of the ascension of Dick Vitale. And Vitale particularly was a huge fan of that team. He's the one that coined the Flying Illini, the number one. I bought a t-shirt at the IGA with a picture of Dick Vitale holding up his finger saying, I think I bought one off of Etsy a while back if someone had one lying around. It's a little small, as it turns out.
One that says Awesome Baby?
Awesome Baby, number one, number one. Yes. He's got the finger. So I had that. And that team captured the imagination. To this day, I will talk to people that do not, that like I've told people, there have been people I have told, I went to the University of Illinois, and they have actually, depending on their age, have either said, oh my gosh, because they know I'm a sports writer, I know about sports, they'll be like, oh, that 89 team was great, or that 05 team. I think that that is really one of the most remarkable things about it. It's really something, right? Like, someday, Illinois is going to have a team make the Final Four That's actually not that memorable or great. But but the thing about Illinois is our two teams that have made the Final Four are these like lasting, incredible teams, both of which probably should have won the national championship. I can never figure out if that makes it worse or better that they didn't win one, because there are these lasting teams forever, and I think could have been truly iconic teams forever, and I think still are, but just obviously fell short in the title.
Yeah, and I have like. Here, I'm going to give you a preview of the newsletter for next week. Mm-hmm,
yes.
Because I've already been formulating it in my brain. It's like, that's our fan experience. Like, I saw the tweet yesterday of teams that were 15 or more point underdogs in the last 10 years or whatever. There have been 9 victories or whatever. And 3 of them were Illinois. This game against Nebraska, the Wisconsin game. I think Michigan State was the other one. Anyway, I don't remember the years or anything else, but it's this, why does Illinois like come out of nowhere to beat a Wisconsin? And that's also the Illinois football reputation of, yes, we've never, you know, we're one of the 10 worst programs the last 20 years, but in that phase, we did 2 BCS bowls. Yeah. You know, Missouri's never been to a BCS bowl. They have a consistent program in the last 20 years, finally, after 2 decades of awful. But they've still never been to a BCS bowl or, whatever they call them, the New Year's Six or whatever. Right. We have this experience of spikes and then back down like not many other fan bases do. But it's also in basketball that we have these two, you know, if you made a list of best teams to never win it in college basketball, I bet nearly every list is going to have 05 Illinois and 89 Illinois.
Yeah.
And it's, that's our experience.
And it's not just because they were good. They were also so fun. Like they were just so fun and so memorable and so iconic. And to me, I think frankly, it's difficult to overstate that as another reason why people are still so obsessed about Illinois basketball. Like it's not like they had that Loyola team that snuck into the Final Four. And they were fun, and they had, you know, Sister Helena or whatever her name was. But you know, they're obviously flukes. Illinois has no fluke Final Four teams. They have these great teams that didn't make it. And I think there's value in that. And I also think, but of course, that's the problem, right? That's why you can go through 15 years and have people that are 25 years old. And by the way, also, if all of you that are 25, please don't go home for Thanksgiving. COVID is serious, for crying out loud. You're the problem. I know we're not supposed to say that, but it's you. You're the problem. Anyway, so
out of nowhere.
But sorry, that's my thoughts about 20 somethings right now. I live in a college town, man. You know how it goes. So without the great testing system of the University of Illinois, by the way,
which
has been terrific. Anyway, the point is that like I think that's the thing. I think that's why those teams were so memorable, and it always seemed to be building to something. But I think that's also why so many of the bad moments are so burned in our brains. To me, if you were to ask me the 10 most memorable Illini moments, I think you could make a pretty strong argument that Bruce Weber's post-Purdue press conference would be on there, where that was like the fever broke. Like that was where everyone was like, oh, wow, this is not going to work. And, you know, there was a time, it's forgotten now because Bruce Weber has become this big, you know, figure in Illinois basketball. Like people used to wear those Weber grill, like they would wear the hard hats with a Weber grill on top of them because Bruce Weber was so beloved. I would argue one of the truly great moments of that 05 team was after they beat Arizona. It was right after his mother had died and he was like so emotional. It was such a big part of it. There is this notion that Bruce Weber, listen, we all know Bruce's issues. We all know some of the problems. And I think you're seeing them at Kansas State. And you're seeing like the same kind of thing that we've kind of talked about in the same way that it could ultimately be kind of grating. But like it should not be lost how beloved Bruce Weber was until it turned. Like in a specific way that I would argue even Bill Self was not when he was here. Like people loved Bruce Weber because he, and you know, one of the main reasons they loved Bruce Weber is the same reason that they were so upset about Bill Self. He said he was going to stay here. Like he said, I would argue this is one of the things that really helped Brad Underwood. Brad Underwood, when he got the job, to be fair, this is right after he'd stayed at a place for 1 year, but nevertheless, he said, this is the job I want. This is the place I want to be. And that has always been like a big part of it, right? Because it always feels like this is a place where if you stick with it for the long haul, it will pay off. And I think, and Self, like I finally have made my peace with Self. I made my peace with Self a few years ago. I will never stop bringing up the hair plugs and the toupee. It's obviously hair plugs and the toupee. It's fine. I get it. I'm in my mid-40s myself. I'll always bring that stuff up. But like, I'm no longer angry about that anymore, because there was a while where like Self leaving felt like this open wound. Like, not just that he left with all this talent. I mean, I remember when Weber was hired, Dee Brown sulking in the front row of the press conference because he was upset. He didn't know who this guy was. And Weber turning that around is something that should not be forgotten, and I think should not be forgotten how beloved he was and how embraced he was, because he said he wanted to be here forever. He wanted to be part of the Illinois family. And it just turned out that he wasn't the guy for the long haul. And I think that's the thing, one of the reasons I think people are excited about Underwood, who I would argue is not as warm and cuddly as Bruce Weber is. Certainly, we want someone to make this place what it's supposed to be. And they're not looking for, you know, it's funny. They're not Auburn. You know, they're not someone just coming to get a quick fix and then hand it off to somebody else. Like, we want, that was one of the main appeals of Weber when he got here. And so I think that's I think an advantage they have with Underwood is, frankly, Underwood is not, you know, 41. Like, he's in his mid-50s. There's, unless he goes to the NBA, like, it's hard to imagine like him taking over for an Izzo or a Self or somebody. Right. Like, it feels like this probably is the job. I know the fact that he was a Western help, that he knew how kind of important it was. I think that's a thing that you just want someone. It's just like with football, right? You just want, you say this all the time, you want a plan, you want a process, you want someone to just stick with and put it together. And I think that's what they're hoping for out of Underwood.
Yeah, and I agree that one of the first images I remember being posted on the old Illini board, when it was just a message board in like 03, 04, 05, was the Bruce Almighty movie cover with Jim Carrey like dangling the world in his hands with, you know, photoshopped Bruce Weber's face. Like, you know, it's just so weird to think of all the anger in 2012 and everything that led to that press conference, and you go back 8 years of fans having no problem putting Bruce Almighty up on, you know, on the wall and everything else. It's just amazing.
Well, and Gross was the savior too, right? Yeah, Gross was the savior too. I mean, like I think that's the thing, is there's a lot of, like, this is not one of those places like Kansas State, frankly, where like two years in, you're like, you're not giving me get me out of here. Like, we want to believe. Gross, I would argue, we believed a year or two too long. Weber, we probably believed a year or two too long. But I think that speaks well to the fan base. I think that is actually something that I think will help sustain this in the long term, is that idea that I know people think this is a bad thing for the football program. I think I'm not sure about that, but I definitely think it's a good thing for the basketball program.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's, I always take people back to the Quentin Snyder press conference for Gross. Like, people were like, I had questions of Gross from the beginning. You know, I just wasn't so sure. And like, you need to go back to that moment, okay? Like, Gross takes over. He takes a team that had wildly underachieved. They go to a 7 seed. They nearly make the Sweet 16. Then he lands Leron Black, a top 30 player at the time, and then this kid decommits from Louisville, and Gross slides in there and gets a commitment from Quentin Snyder. So he's got, you know, more or less probably even better than the class Underwood has coming in right now of Miller and Cabello. Like, he has two top 35 players ready to come in and be the next generation. And on that night, you could not find an Illini fan that was like, I have some of my questions about his offensive schemes. It was full all in. If you remember, that night is when Cliff Alexander announced he was going to visit Illinois. So it's like, wait, we have two top 30 players and the number 3 player in the country is visiting in 2 weeks. Like, no one could question anything, and everything was going to be perfect. And from the moment of Cliffmas to, you know, from that moment forward, it just started to slowly unravel.
Do you remember who it was? Remember that video of when that one recruit had announced he was going to Illinois, and Whitman and Gross high-fived each other, and they were really excited? I don't remember who
yes.
it was.
That was Jeremiah Tillman.
Jeremiah Tillman, that's who it was, right?
Yes,
right.
Yes. And then he bails for...
Yeah, exactly. You know, and again, like, I don't know how much you can blame Gross for all of that. Like, I think Gross had to go. I think it was a wise decision to get rid of him. But again, Whitman and Gross were best buds, right? Like, this was going to work, you know? So I think that... You can argue that maybe it's not great, that it's a bad thing that that fans want to give these guys coaches, but they want them to succeed. They want these coaches to succeed, and they want to make it happen.
Yes. Okay. So let's go to that second rebirth that you and I both witnessed. So we're both there in school at the time of when it all fell apart, which was the Bruce Pearl. And, you know, maybe I'll just do a minute on it. So the Deion Thomas recruitment, Bruce Pearl doesn't like that Deion picked Illinois over Iowa. He calls him up at 1:30 in the morning. I don't know if it was 1:30, but I always say that it was. Gets him to apparently admit on the phone call that, yes, Illinois had given him whatever, $75,000 in a Chevy Blazer or whatever. He turns that into the NCAA. That causes him to lose his job and get ostracized by the coaching community because nobody likes a narc. But it also led to an investigation at Illinois by, I should note, Mike Slive, the eventual SEC commissioner, and who was working for the NCAA at the time. And they come up with lack of institutional control, which was, we couldn't prove this Deion Thomas allegation, but while we were digging and as we were doing our interviews and as we were doing all of this, we discovered A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and because of that, Illinois loses. So you're banned from the tournament for a year, but the biggest blow was no off-campus recruiting. You have to wait until somebody shows up at your campus. You can't go to July camps, can't do anything else, and you're reduced to 2 scholarships per class for the next 2 classes. And this was after they had some losses, and Jamie Brandon bailed and went to LSU, and so they could have used 5 or 6 recruits. And for 2 classes, they only could get 2 recruits, of which, let me think if I can remember this. I think it was Mark Davidson and Brooks Taylor 1 year,
right,
and then Richard Keen and Chris Gandy the second year.
That'd be right.
And Keen was a massive get because
he got from Duke, right? That was the whole
thing. Yeah, it was Illinois or Duke, and he's a top 15 talent and everything else. And we couldn't recruit him. We couldn't follow him. We couldn't go do a home visit. We couldn't do anything. We had to only recruit on campus. But the damage was done mostly by that scholarship reduction because, you know, I remember that, let's see, 92 team was like 9 guys and then walk-ons. 93 was like 8 guys and then walk-ons. Gosh. Like they were just, you just couldn't fill it in. You had to have Steve Roth, that they found on campus as the extra big man because
I played against him and Gus Macker one time, by the way. he was still a lot better than me, even 7 foot walk on.
You know what? I don't know if I've ever told my Steve Roth story on a podcast, so I'm going to do that right now. So I am hiking with my wife and my son in St. Louis in like 2010, 2009, something like that. We are in Weldon Spring Recreation Area. It's a Sunday afternoon, and I come around a corner on the trail, and there's a guy who has a picnic basket and a blanket and sitting there with some girl having lunch along the trail. And I walk up, and it's Steve Roth. And I'm like, aren't you Steve Roth? And he's like, yeah. And she's like, how does he know you? And so now I see, I'm like, what is this, a first date or something? And he says, yeah, this is our first date. I'm like, okay, Steve, I'm going to shine you up here, boy. So I'm a basketball nerd. I'm like, okay, there was a game. John Amici of Penn State was dominating us. Okay, just dominating us. And Henson didn't like what he was seeing, so he put in Roth. So he puts this guy in. He gets a block. He gets Amici to foul him. Illinois fans at home are going crazy about, like, hey, who's this guy? Who's this walk-on? And I just talk him up, like, she's like, really? College basketball? Like, in a big game on TV and all this stuff? And so, you know, then I was just like, you know, drop the mic, walk off. You know, you're welcome, Steve. And, you know, I'm one of the 5 humans that knows more Steve Roth, you know, fun facts of specific games where he came in and that he's the first guy to get to Kauffman and tackle him in the shot for Iowa. And, you know, I love it. I love that somebody walks on and gets a few moments and, you know, I can tell those moments to some date he's on.
She couldn't have been 20 years later. She couldn't have been too surprised. He's 7 feet tall. Like,
yes,
she couldn't
correct.
Have been. Yes. Yeah, I will say this is how big Illinois basketball is in Central Illinois. My dad came to watch me play Gus Macker against Steve Roth. So he's like, you're playing against Steve Ross. And to me, he was excited. It was like my proudest moment in his eyes that I had played.
Did he block any of your shots?
I think basically what we did is just shoot a ton of three-pointers falling away. So we didn't even have to deal with it. And unfortunately, those did not fall.
Got it. I forget what we were even talking about of why I went on a Steve Ross tangent. Oh, Bruce Pearl. What happened? Yeah, that's right. So, yes, we had walk-ons in the rotation pretty regularly just because there were so few players, and it just started to crumble. But they got it back together. I mean, we only missed the tournament 91 and 92. 93, we made it and beat Long Beach State. That was the one tournament win in my time there. 94, we made it and lost to Georgetown.
No, what was the year they went to Albany and lost to Chattanooga?
To Tulsa?
Tulsa.
They
lost to Tulsa because they were going to play Chattanooga. No, yes. Because Chattanooga had won the first round. Yes, that's correct.
Yes.
Because I went to that. I drove the Daily Illini car to that
game.
The last game of the day. We thought we were going to have a whole... Once that early game had gotten over, we're like, oh, wow, they're going to the Sweet 16. We're going to be here all weekend. And instead, we just decided to drive home that night because we were college students and stupid.
Yes. I miss those days. Of course, where did I just drive yesterday? Anyway, so... So that was kind of the crumble. It was like 9 seed, 11 seed, 6 seed or whatever, and then out of the tournament in 96, and that's when Henson decides to retire. And that's when Lon arrives. And so that was this, like, that 96 team really sticks out to me as being like, we had this hope that maybe it wasn't over after Bruce Pearl, especially after 93, like Dion's dominating, and then we get Kiwan and he's pretty good, and we're decent and at least in the tournament in 94 and 95, and then 96 it starts to crumble again. And you're like, oh gosh, it's over.
I think there was the Shelly Clark incident too. Shelly Clark was going to be the big guy, and he had the home invade. I covered that for the Daily Illini. That was like that because he was a key player for that team, and it was a bad scene over there. So yeah, it did. It just kind of fell apart. I actually feel like again Kruger just really underappreciated to be able to get that team back up moving, and then obviously to be able to hand off to Self, who I don't think we need to argue. I think we all knew when Self was there that like this guy's either going to make us he's either going to be our Tom Izzo or our Coach K, or he's going to go somewhere else and be their Coach K. That's what happens. And that is what happened. And so I think that's another part of Illinois basketball I think it's hard for people to wrap their minds around is because they were so good for so long. And they were getting good. And then Self came. I think it did sometimes, from the outside, sometimes people will say that Illinois basketball fans think too highly of their team and they think they're better than they are. And I think that may be kind of true. I still feel like this should be at least a top 20 team every year. But but Self made you think that this was a regular Final Four team. Like Self made you feel like that was going to happen. And I think it would have been if he, and remember the confluence of circumstances that had to happen for that to go down in the first place. There had to be I'll do a bleep here, but there had to be the Roy Williams, I don't give a bleep about North Carolina right now. And there had to be, which led to then Self going to Kansas and then Weber coming up and, and so it was a rare, that's another one of the Illinois basketball curse things, right? Is the idea that Self probably would have not left for any other job other than Kansas, but he had to take Kansas. He had to take Kansas, and he did, and we've seen what happened.
And he had the first top 10 recruit since the 80s committed in Charlie Villanueva. And so we, the fan base is like, wait, we're recruiting like top 10 guys now. Yeah. Like this is totally different. This is a rocket ship for the Stars.
And then the most awesome team ever that went to the Final Four.
Yes.
Now you get to now, and like obviously with what happened last year, they were obviously going to make the tournament. They obviously would have been. I think they were primed for something good, but the fact is they still, like, my son was born in 2014, and my second youngest son's been 2014. He has not seen a Illinois tournament game yet. It's, yep. it's absolutely insane. And
it is.
And it is. And it makes me very happy to see people, as I like my like Gary Parish, which is their great college basketball podcast. Like they are not of the why does Illinois think they're so great? They are of this program can be great and Brad Underwood is the guy to do it. And that's very yep. exciting.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, I think that like the key moment in all of that, like you were talking about earlier, is the thing that Underwood's secretary at Western Illinois wrote down for him of like, you know, she was doing some exercise and says, write down your dream job. And he writes down Illinois because he's at Western Illinois watching what's happening with that 04-05 team and how this state embraced it. And that's what he wrote down. And so, you know, you like you said, you want to get a fan base fired up.
Yeah.
Tell people, like, this is where I want to be. Tell people, this is what I want to do. This is where I want to build it. Like, you know, I was talking about this with some other people recently. Like, he, you know, what was he, 11 years at Western Illinois? And then the JUCO in Florida, and then, you know, and then back to assistant for South Carolina and K-State and... You know, like he went the long, long, long path until he got Stephen F. Austin, won three conference titles. That got him Oklahoma State, and that got him, you know, Illinois.
I find that what he did coaching last year to be very underappreciated, to change basically the way he's always coached. And the thing, and the, not only that, but the thing that made him such an exciting coaching star, and to change that because of Kofi. And listen, I think there's reason to be concerned about the recruiting right now, to be entirely honest. I feel like this is supposed to, they were supposed to get at least a couple of these guys, and they haven't really gotten any of them.
Right.
And I think college basketball is going to be different this year because you're going to be able to bridge a little bit. Because again, theoretically speaking, If Trent wants to come back, Trent Frazier wants to come back next year, he can. Like, I don't think he's going to, but the point is, there's going to be a lot of like that extra year of eligibility is going to give them a lot of options. I think, but certainly, put it this way: if Io and Kofi had not come back, I mean, I think that Illinois would still be good, but I think we'd start asking some more questions about the recruiting that's not kicking in quite the way we thought it would. Or we'd be pouring everything into Miller and Curbelo so much that that we would be like, well, once everybody sees how fun they are, then they'll want to get back on.
Yes. And, you know, there's also this, like, simpatico thing here of, like, in the Final Four in 89, 16 years later, in the Final Four in 2005, 16 years later, 2021.
If there is a Final Four. If there is a Final Four. If there is a Final Four. If there is a Final Four.
There will be a Final Four. I swear to God, if there's not a Final Four. But yeah, like there's that whole thing. And so, you know, somebody asked me recently, like, are we putting too much in this? Like, is this, are we pouring, like, you know, what if it's just that season where something doesn't click and you miss Feliz too much and Griffin's shooting was a big part of it. And, you know, 13-7 with a couple last second shots becomes 11-9 with, you know, and my answer to that is I'm okay with 11-9. Like I want a banner and I want to see it hanging in the State Farm Center, almost at Assembly Hall. I want to see that. But like the goal here is get in that tournament because this is a team built to win six games.
Yeah. I mean, like, and, you know, their KenPom record right now.
That's what I care about.
Their KenPom record is 15-10 right now. If you want to terrify an Illinois fan, they're 15. And I, again, that always, like, it was, I think it was like at 500 for most of, until like early January last year. And then and then everything kicked in. So I think we also know what it can. I don't think anyone's serious. I don't think Pomeroy would think that. But, you know, clearly there is this idea now that, like, oh, my gosh, why are we – like, we're going to kill Baylor. We're going to kill Duke. And we're going to be number one. Going like, that is there. And I get it. I'm having the same thoughts. I do – and, frankly, I don't want to pump the brakes. I just don't want to because I've been waiting so long for this to happen. And I feel like this is the last – hatchet job, right? This is the thing where we're so excited, and I don't want to do it. I did not dream that Io and Kofi would both be. I actually did not ever think Kofi was leaving, but I did. Yeah. I did think that Io was gone. To have all of them come back and have all this come together and have it in this type in this season, you know what? Life is really kind of hard right now. And so if you're going to tell me that, careful, Will, your heart, something bad might happen if you get too excited about Illinois basketball. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and just pour my happiness into this thing right now because things are tough all over.
Yes. And I think, you know, it's possible because of COVID. That's why Iowa was here. Like people are like, oh man, COVID cost us the tournament. You know, we were finally going to, we could break that streak. And I know we were number 21. We would have been a 6 or 7 seed, whatever. We would have been in no matter what happened. Yes. But like, we'd still technically have this streak. And my response to like, I hate COVID so much is like, you know, in 10 years, say this is a Final Four team, say it does happen, it might not have ever happened without COVID canceling this and Io's little thing in his head about unfinished business and the fact that the NBA draft wasn't till late November and everything else of why he decided, you know what, I think I'm going to return and I'm going to see what, you know, I'm going to see what we can do. Like, That little clip of him saying, but I need that national championship first. Like, my first reaction as an Illinois fan is like, oh, God, don't put it out there. Like, don't say it. Don't put it into the universe. But then my second reaction is like, wait, like, if we have a first-team All-American and we've got another guy who's maybe one of the top 15 players in the country, and we've got these two freshmen and we've got these two seniors, like, it might be possible.
Yeah, this is the Io thing, right? This is the Io thing. Is he's the one that, like, that's what makes him so awesome at the end of games. Is like, even in games where he has not been great during the games, and he still doesn't, like, it's amazing for a guy that struggles with as much of his shooting how dead eye he is at the end of the game. Like, that's what happens when when you're that kind of guy. And to be honest, you know, I think that look at the major problem with last year's team was their shooting. I don't think you have to squint that hard to see improved shooting this year. Sure, you're losing Griffin, but I don't think Frazier's going to shoot like that did last year. I think Miller's got there. You see all the hope for Grandison and Hutcherson. I think that we've not seen those guys, but that's what they're there for. They're there to shoot. Yep. And, you know, I think that's the way that Underwood wants to play anyway, and is to have those shooters. I think there's I think there's reason to be excited. I don't think it is worth it to temper it. Like, I just think it's okay. If it doesn't work out, you know what? It's a COVID year. Nothing has worked out the way that it's supposed to. My first grader spent 2 months staring at an iPad and calling it school. Like, you know, there's all sorts of things that have not gone the way it's supposed to. I'm going to try to enjoy this. And I do think that we should not freak out a little bit. Illinois already run into this with Wright State and Chicago State having to take over. I just don't think we should freak out too much. I've talked to Norlander about this. He's talked this constantly. Like, they will get a tournament in this year if they have to have a 9-team round robin in the ballroom of the Hyatt. Like, they will get it done at some point this year. And so, lose a bunch of games. We may lose a bunch of games in the regular season. The Big Ten season may look like a dog's breakfast of a schedule and a totally weird kind of thing. But they will get a tournament in this year.
Yes, and I looked at, like, you know, yes, college football, the people were like, the schools need the money, they're going to play, this and that, and there was all that debate all summer and everything else, and how can they cancel, are they going to play, what's the, you know, money. For the thing people aren't focused on is, like, the NCAA, their entire budget is the NCAA tournament. That, you know, if they want to run the Division III cross-country national championships next fall, they need television money from this tournament. So it's going to happen. I agree. Okay, I've kept you a long time, longer than I said I would. So I'll go to you for any final thoughts on this basketball season.
You know, this does feel, you know, I wrote about this in New York Magazine this week about how college basketball, of all the sports, COVID has messed up all the sports, but college basketball, it has specifically messed up because it launched right when the season was just about to end, right when COVID hit. And now the new season is just about to start when we're in the worst wave. And college basketball to me, I write about baseball professionally, baseball sport I wrote about the most, but college basketball to me is, you know, it is a blessing. It is something that is, you know, I'm from Mattoon. I've lived in New York, I live in Los Angeles, I live in Georgia now, but like, you know, I never quite feel like I can catch my breath. That's probably not the best time to say that phrase, but the best time I can truly take a deep breath and like catch my breath is when I'm in Central Illinois. And to me, Illinois basketball is such a part of that. I find myself honestly quite envious that you're there. And so for me, I feel like everyone's doing what they can to try to find, if not normalcy, some sort of solace. I found myself watching the Cardinals this year, thinking, you know, not only was I wanted the Cardinals to win, obviously, but mostly I found myself just being like, I'm just grateful that this is here. Like, I'm just grateful that I have this. Yeah. I think I'm that to see them whenever games are able to get in during Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, just to be able to see them out in the court. It's going to feel like a relief and a balm, and then when they when they smoke Baylor and smoke Duke at our number one, we're gonna it's going to be even better. So I can't wait. This is and my last thing on this is you told that story about Kiwan Garris. My favorite story about this is I had an Econ 104 class with Matt Heldman. And I covered the team, so I knew him from there. And Matt Heldman was a much better student than I was. He let me, I will always, bless his, rest his soul, but I loved him even before we knew all this, if just because he would help a lowly reporter use his read off his Econ 104 notes for the midterm. And I got a C, and it saved it. I graduated on time because of that, because I hated Econ. That was a terrible prerequisite for us all to have.
Love it. So I'll let you plug real quick. When is the book out? When is the book? Is,
May
11th. Is it out now?
No, so it's not until May 11th. It's called How Lucky. You can find everything I do. I'm on Twitter, though I'm not very good at it, at William F. Leach. But the best way to get everything is I have a newsletter, williamfleach.substack.com. It is free, and it has links to everything that I write and an original essay every Saturday.
Love it. Okay, thanks, man. Let's do this. Let's have a season. Let's go out and, you know, every 16 years, let's do something.
I can't wait. All right. Thanks, Robert.
All right. Thanks.